The subject of our study tonight is titled Facing Challenges in Our Work. We've been studying a book by Tom Nelson titled Work Matters, Connecting Sunday Worship to Monday Work. The main idea of the book is that all of life is redeemed and falls under God's sovereign direction, and the way that we live our life from Monday through Saturday ought to reflect the same faith that we express on Sunday. You can't separate those two and make into the different compartments in life. Instead, we understand that all of life falls under Christ's rule. We've looked at a variety of different subjects, and tonight we're going to think about how there are a variety of challenges that we face in work. Man's heart is deceitful above all things, and because of that, it gives rise to all sorts of evils in the workplace. As you do work to connect your faith to all of life, you need to be ready to face the challenges that happen, that appear when you work in a fallen world. And Nelson puts a heading on that of especially maintaining personal integrity. This is where he's going to emphasize the expression of your faith in the workplace. Integrity is often defined as what you do when no one else is looking. Do you know what that means? Joseph and Renee, if your mom and dad aren't around, do you sometimes act differently than when they're in the same room?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Very good. You answered very honestly. I appreciate that. If you ask me the same question, I might have to answer the same way. Sometimes. There's an honesty there, that integrity teaches us to act the same way whether anyone is watching us or not. Integrity, though, stretches a little bit further than that. The Bible, I would urge you to see, stretches further than that. Because the way you act is not just an outward conformity to God's word, but all throughout the Bible you find that God calls you to conform inwardly to his word. That means that belief and behavior have to go hand in hand. Jesus says that out of an impure heart come all manner of wickedness, lies, adultery, murder, and so on. At the same time, we could say that out of a redeemed heart, a heart that believes, there comes all sorts of righteousness, okay, following after God. Nelson gives a very pertinent example in this chapter, an example of Daniel. You know Daniel as the one who experienced the lion's den, and that's maybe the best known story about Daniel. But the book of Daniel starts with his being taken into captivity as a young boy, as a young man. We're not exactly sure how old he was, but he had been trained in the ways of the Lord, and so when he went off into a foreign land, those beliefs were, in a sense, not so prevalent. That might be a nice way to put it. He was surrounded not by so much by the people of faith, but surrounded by lots of different unbelieving and pagan opportunities. We might say that he had many opportunities to depart from the faith because of the surroundings. He was gone out of the promised land. He probably lost a significant portion of his family and friends. There still were some there that were deported with him. But there are other opportunities that you may even recognize that by the promotions that he received, there were opportunities for him to depart from faith. And yet, by God's grace, he perseveres. the very beginning, in chapter 1, Daniel says that he determined in his heart not to defile himself with the king's food. This presents a very interesting and a very important test for Daniel. You might remember that he and his friends were chosen to receive special training and special position, and out of that there was some sense of privilege or probably a certain aspects of comfort that came with that. One of the things, though, that was provided was a daily portion of food from the king's table. And that portion would have been sacrificed to idols or potentially unclean from Daniel and from the perspective of the law. He determined, though, to not defile himself with the king's food. And from there on goes it's a wonderful story of how he appealed to those over him. He appealed that he might not eat that rich portion of food, but instead have vegetables to eat. And the point here is not that a vegetable diet is a God-given diet. The point is that he would not eat those foods that were defiled, and determined to maintain his integrity. As he did that, as the account goes, God blessed him in that, and he and his friends showed themselves to be healthier and more alert and brighter. Maybe they weren't up having drunken parties every night, I'm not sure. But God blessed him for his faithfulness. That integrity runs throughout the rest of his life. You might remember that he doesn't take glory for interpreting the king's dreams. That happens twice. He didn't hide his faith or his prayers when he is threatened later in Persia. Just over and over again, Daniel is an example of integrity. Nelson puts it this way: your personal integrity is the most important asset that you bring to your workplace. Your most important asset that you bring to your workplace. And understand that in the context of a Christian integrity, not just integrity in a generic sense. At the same time, you do need to recognize that it will be threatened in many ways. I thought about just opening it up and offering you to fill in the blank of what some of those pressures might be. I thought that might go on record, or you might not want to describe your workplaces in that way. So I just put together a list of potential things that you might face. You might find that you're pressured to cheat at your workplace. You might feel pressured to look the other way when somebody else cheats. You might face the temptation to sleep with your boss or a coworker. You might be tempted to hide something that is not a very good aspect of a financial outlook in your place of work, or make a proposal look better than it actually is. All of these are just examples of the things that you might face in your workplace. There's a real need for vigilance in this area. Proverbs 4:23 says, "Keep your heart with all vigilant, for from it flow the springs of life." Keep your heart with all vigilance. Vigilance means being on the lookout and recognizing when there's danger. Nelson gives an illustration here of being on a ship's deck and watching out for icebergs. And I thought that to be a very appropriate illustration. You know very well that the iceberg that you see is only a fraction of what's underneath the water. It takes vigilance to watch for the proverbial tip of the iceberg, so that you don't wreck by the iceberg that's underneath. In vigilance, you watch out for those things that will threaten you and your faithful Christian living in that workplace. And Nelson then gives several different challenges that you face. There are five or six of them that we'll talk about tonight. He starts by saying, watch out for small compromises. Do you know what I mean by small compromises? Somebody give me an illustration of a small compromise.
Regular, I'll sell his Coke 10 cents cheaper as a
common law. Somebody said a misleading answer. You may want to look good in someone else's eyes, and so you might answer in a way that tells part of the truth, but not all of the truth. And Jonathan said, this guy's a regular, we'll cut him a little deal. Sell his Coke just a little cheaper.
When you don't have authority to do so.
When you don't have authority to do so. That's important.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a good business tactic.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. Good having the authority to do so is important. You might cut corners on materials. The sandwich might be supposed to be a quarter pounder, but you make a third of a pound burger. Everyone would be especially upset about that, I'm sure. you might just become lazy in attention to detail. Might be adding a few dollars to your expense account or making your shopping list look different than it actually is. Using company time for personal projects. These are areas where there are maybe not huge consequences because of these things. The American economy is not going to come crashing down. You might reason to yourself, because I sold Coke at 10 cents less than it ought to be sold. And yet, those small compromises are in a sense, tiny cracks in your integrity, cracks that can lead to deeper and deeper areas of compromise and of conflict that could arise. By way of remedy in this situation, Nelson reminds of that vigilance of the heart that Proverbs 4 speaks of. To keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. And recognizing that, all of life is called to honor Christ, and it doesn't matter whether that faithfulness is in large things or small things. The second challenge that he identifies as work overload and burnout. I thought this was very interesting for him to lay his finger on. This one is maybe easily identified, especially in our economy right now, where companies are more and more downsizing their work personnel and expecting the same job to be done by fewer and fewer people. And that means that where a job once was done by three people, now it's done by two. And it could be that the job could have been done by two beforehand, we won't go there. But more often than not, the expectation is that you just need to pick up the slack. And if you're not willing to do that, then there's the implied pressure that, well, we'll just find someone who will. In response to that, more and more people are taking on more and more work, to the point that the job becomes maybe an all-consuming portion of your life. might lead you to sacrifice other personal things in your life. The potential is that the work will, as Nelson puts it, suck the life out of you and spiral down both in work and in home life. This goes back to some of the earlier lessons that we had about a Christian perspective towards vocation. And a remedy for that is to really address an unhealthy work pattern and an unhealthy attitude towards work. It could be that that job has been elevated in your mind to a place of idolatry, or it may be elevated because of the pressure of the expectations that are being given to you. Whether you've elevated there because of that desire or because you've been pushed into it, it's unhealthy one way or the other. And work overload and burnout are very important to take stock of. In that light, I remind you of how we studied the fourth commandment. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. So remember the balance of work and rest that God has given. And then recognize that it might take time to correct this, but at the same time, you should also recognize that it's not impossible. It means you'll have to learn to say no, learn to delegate, learn what needs to be done, learn what needs to be done by you, and what might be able to be done by someone else. Learn what needs to be done today, and what might be able to wait for another time. By the way, I might just observe that with modern technology, the pressure to do something right now is very intense. The smartphone is always in the pocket. The text buzzes you, and that buzz means answer me, not just today, but that we feel compelled to answer them in the next 30 seconds, if not sooner. I'm not a power smartphone user, but so if you text me, don't expect to get an answer in 30 seconds. That's part of the pressure of overwork. Third, workplace temptation. And here, Nelson has in mind a broad variety of things. He talks about the temptations to abuse of power, manipulating others for your own gain, plagiarism, stealing, flirting, and affairs. They're each one a little bit different, but he has in mind that in the workplace there are good things that you are engaged in that have with it attached to it temptation to abuse of those things. So authority is not a bad thing, and in fact you might be in charge of your workplace. But attached to that, there can be the temptation to the abuse of that power. The workplace has typically in it a lot of relationships. You will work shoulder to shoulder with a variety of different individuals, sometimes male and female, and you build work relationships. And sometimes those are very connected. I mean, you spend a lot of time together, you are solving problems together. But attached to that comes this temptation to that relationship would be something more than it ought to be. There's the development of ideas, especially the university setting. There's the idea of working and researching. But attached to that is the temptation to take somebody else's work and make it your own by plagiarism. Or stealing it. So there are these temptations that go along with the good and natural aspects of the workplace that you need to recognize. Here, Nelson urges anticipation. recognizing that in these situations that there is an exercise of authority, a building of relationship, a development of an idea, recognize what the temptations might be along the way. And as you anticipate those, then build boundaries in your work practices that will help you to understand those and to maintain your integrity in them. As Daniel did, resolve before it happens to be faithful to your God. You might think as well of the example of Joseph in his work situation, so to speak, under Potiphar. He was a slave, but was elevated to a position of power, manager of the whole household, and Potiphar's wife wanted to sleep with him. He had both the position, the power, and the opportunity to do something about that. But he said to her, "How can I sin against my God and against my master?" He recognized the sin that would be part of that. Part of the remedy is to anticipate those things that are part and parcel of your workplace, and resolve beforehand not to give opportunity for those. Specifically, we could apply this especially to sexual temptation by some very specifics. Don't flirt. Don't even start down that road in the workplace. That doesn't have a place in the development of working relationships. That's, we might call it provocative talking. Don't dress provocatively. That could be flirtatious as well. Don't feed those desires in other avenues, especially through your use of internet. I mean, steer clear of or pornography or anything that even comes close to it. We can define things in our mind as, well, that's not pornographic, but there are certain things on the internet that may not be defined that way, but may be flirtatious as well. Don't linger in tempting situations. Don't give opportunity for sin to take place. Joseph, when he couldn't reason with Potiphar's wife, finally just fled the scene. He left completely. This slide, I want you to hear James 1, verses 13 through 15. Let no one say when he is tempted, "I am tempted by God," for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Recognize temptation as it comes before you, and in the light of that temptation, remind yourself that this is of your relationship to God. And this is where I think Joseph's response, "How can I sin against God in this way?" is so important. It's here that Nelson quotes Bonhoeffer. I included this on your handout. And what he's getting at is how, when we're tempted, that God seems to disappear. We don't want God around when we're tempted. All at once a secret smoldering fire is kindled. The flesh burns and is in flames. It makes no difference whether it is a sexual desire or ambition or vanity or desire for revenge or love of fame or power or greed for money. at this moment, God is quite unreal to us. When we're tempted, we kick God into the back seat, or maybe even out of the car completely. And instead, part of our remedy is to remember that we belong to God, and that the desire is not God tempting us, but it is our own desire. You could also look at 1 Corinthians 10:13 and remember that God has given power and command to escape. In 1 Corinthians 6:18, where he says to flee temptation. There are two more that I'll go through real quickly here just to close things off tonight. One of the challenges vocationally that we face is unemployment. Unemployment brings a variety of temptations with it. There are emotional temptations that stem from doubt, fears, maybe self-recriminations that bring with it emotional challenges. Then there are financial. There's stress that comes from loss of income, and it can bring on those worries, fears, doubts, marital strife, and things like that. In this case, part of remedy is to remind yourself of God's sovereign and loving care, and then take steps, take diligent steps to find new work. You might even think of finding work as your job at that point. Finally, traveling temptations. If you're interested in any one of these, we could talk more afterwards. By traveling temptations, it means that when you're away from your normal routines, when you're on the road for work, that you're away from normal routines, away from the people who know you, and there are opportunities for sin that come along with that. Some of those include indulging yourself from sexual indulgence to overeating or over drinking or other types of indulgence. And again, he encourages setting boundaries, anticipate these things, and fill the time with good. Those last two I went over really quickly tonight, so if you would like to hear more about those, you may ask me later. Any questions that you would have tonight?